There's a lot I have to say regarding giftedness and the things in my life that are directly or indirectly related to which, in my view, is everything.
Hello, and welcome to the International Gifted Consortium. I'm Vanessa Wood. We hear real-life stories daily from our communities, from our schools, and from our families across the globe, both heartwarming and heart-wrenching. In order to truly understand our highly and profoundly gifted population, we have to go beyond our own experiences to the depths of another's reality. In each episode, we'll give you a glimpse into the life. So sit back, embrace the space, and take in the view. From the eyes of the highly profoundly gifted, this is Room with a View. Hello, so happy you're here. Thank you for sharing this space with me. Today, it is my hope that this space serves as an opportunity to reflect, collaboratively or individually, however that may surface in each of us. This year, the IGC research team had the honor of interviewing the parents of 88 highly profoundly gifted children. I'm so grateful to be spending moments throughout the month of October reflecting on that experience and all of the behind-the-scenes pieces and people that made it happen. It's truly been an amazing and enlightening process. With me today to sharing the experience from Talentful in Flanders, Belgium, is IGC contributor, research team associate, and colleague, Els de Wit. Hello, Els. Thank you so much for joining me today. It's always a pleasure to be in your presence. I want to start by acknowledging, first of all of your work on the IGC research study to date. It's been overflowing and truly remarkable. Thank you, thank you, thank you. I can honestly not say it enough. As you know, I'm really excited about the release of your book, Highly Profoundly Gifted Children, A Holistic and Critical Approach. Can you give us a glimpse of what to expect?
Hi, Vanessa. Thank you for making me part of the IGC and this wonderful study. I truly believe it will help understand our children and better identify them. For the book, I wanted to dig deeper into highly profoundly giftedness. I always have great talks with my teenagers and children about what can be defined as normal and the relativeness of it all. Also, why do we want to be considered normal and who decides on that? When I talk with parents and teachers, I often notice how deeply rooted our perception is of how children, and more specifically the gifted children, should act, behave, and what they should become. They know that a child does not fit what is defined as normal, but I like to think of such concepts and then wonder why we think that way. Our perceptions, is it culture, sociology, biology? And what if we travel through history? What does that teach us? So in the book, we look at giftedness through time and space. We, and more specifically you and me, talk about what highly profoundly giftedness really is, using the overexcitabilities, of course. It is still very hard for people who do not breathe the concept of highly profoundly giftedness to grasp what is so different about it. It is one of the questions I get asked the most. What makes it so different from just giftedness? I think we both give a deep insight into this in the book. We also look at the history of highly profoundly giftedness. What did people 100, 200 years ago do, and how did they perceive them? We look at the culture aspect of giftedness. What is defined as giftedness can be culturally biased. We also look at the socio-cultural context of giftedness. We discuss how gifted and highly profoundly gifted children are perceived by others. It is often believed they will do well with other people, will take on a leadership role, and will be accepted in society. Is that so, and why? We also look at the needs of these children, which I think is very important too. Should they become all whiz kids? How do we cater the deep thoughts and thorough questions of these children? I personally am a big advocate of philosophy with these children. I love doing that with them. How do we cater the social and emotional aspect? Because as you know, we cannot separate that from the cognitive aspect. I am very grateful about the chapter with the testimonials from the parents, the children, teenagers and grown-up gifted. Even our children and teenagers stepped up and decided to show what giftedness feels like for them. They did it in a short text, a poem, a drawing. I am so grateful for that. We also look at different countries. How do they tackle highly profoundly giftedness? We go to the US, of course, but also, for example, France, Korea, Hong Kong, Slovenia, and many more countries. So, as you can tell, I'm very excited about this book and all its contributors.
This is why I love talking with you, Els. You are always asking the most pertinent questions. So, where do we start? As one listener just messaged me, we have so much to do. We have to do more, she says, and I completely agree. So one way is to get your book into the hands of every individual working with these children. We need every stakeholder to be all in. Parents, educators, psychologists, counselors, pediatricians. We all have to be willing to learn more about the unique development, the unique behaviors, and most importantly, the unique being of these extraordinary children and adolescents. You mentioned the perceptions of normal. In the conversations with the children and adolescents that you work with, how have they wrestled with the perception of normal, or maybe the expectation of normal?
Well, these are actually two different questions. Great questions, though. We don't talk about enough about that. Adolescents have more words to express their feelings about normal and the expectations. They do feel the pressure from outside. On the one hand, you have, you are gifted, why aren't you like this or that? Why don't you excel in the sense of be special? On the other hand, they feel this pressure of not showing their special interests, their intensities too much, which is also a great part that comes with the gifted aspect, of course. A school trip is something to look forward to and not to be anxious about. School break is excitement, not something to resent because of all the stimuli and social pressure. They feel this immense pressure to be like everyone else around them, even though they don't necessarily want to be this way. Some try to fit in, some end up being the loner type. I always laugh during these sessions that I could fill a village with the teenagers who have the dream of living in a cabin in the woods with a good internet connection so they can start an online business, being completely independent of everyone else, but turning it into a village kind of ruins the point they are trying to make. It's an expression of the disappointment they have in their environment, the feeling of we don't fit in, the world expects so much from us, but what do they give us? So the aspect normal versus me usually brings up a lot of emotion, frustration and disappointment. It's a very sad thing to hear a 14-year-old, an 11-year-old talk about how they feel that there is no place for them in this world. I always try to tell and show them that, yes, probably the average and the expected or normal may not be the right thing for them, but that you can create your own place in this world, a world where normal is irrelevant. That's what I did. You can tell these children and teenagers that it's okay to like the Swan Lake at age 3, study an exotic language on your own at 6, have more boy-like interests as a girl, or be a 14-year-old who is interested in church organs and music from the Middle Ages. But you have to make them feel it. You have to breathe and live what you say. So I talk sometimes about my daughter and her quirks and tell about the weird stuff I was interested in as a teenager. They need a place to be weird, people who do not care and actually embrace their inner self. So that's why I started with our online group meetings where we talk about basically everything from small talk to emotions to deep stuff, because I love asking hard questions and just tease each other. We also do deep dive sessions for teenagers and our weekly trajects with the children. We travel through the world so children can experience that other people's normal is our weird and vice versa. We see what great imagination can do and how inventions gone wrong can turn into new inventions they didn't anticipate. So we embrace curiosity. It's not the result I was expecting, but awesome, let's explore. That's our vibe there. In our deep dives, we have professors who come and talk about the things we don't talk about with teenagers, things that are not done, such as dictators, the Lie Flat movement in China, but also deep topics that other people shy away from, like identity, astrophysics, open sessions about physics and math. The audience chooses during the session. We talk to our teenagers, what do you want to know more about? As to the concept normal, what if we put a caveman and a man from the future together in this age? Just an average person from their own time put together in the year 2022. Can you imagine their faces? Now, who is the most normal? Who is right and who decides on that? That's my advice to parents and professionals. Relativize the concept of normal. Normal doesn't exist. It all depends on where and when you were born.
Exactly. In this space and time, we, you and I, really all of us, are exactly who we are meant to be. But in order to feel that, as you say, which is so important, absolutely essential, vital, they, or rather we, have to embrace their acute sensitivities, acute intensities, and acute awarenesses. We, the adults, the stakeholders, have to allow them to embrace this greater than typical response in whatever form. Alignment is key. If we align our efforts with their emotional, imaginational, intellectual, psychomotor, and sensual energies, space begins to open, energy begins to flow. And once that energy is flowing and engaged, we can begin to facilitate their autonomous forces and begin to embed other essentials, such as like-minded peers, scaffolding, life skills, and coping mechanisms that feel right. This is doable. What about if we go back to the space and time of your childhood, Els? What are some of your fondest memories? And what's maybe one thing you wish you could have done differently?
I was one of those people who didn't know how to study until she was at university. That was a very tough way to learn. I had no executive functions, planning, using your diary, knowing what teachers really wanted to see in an assignment, summarizing. I had to learn all that when I was 18. My dissertation mentor learned me how to dig deep, how to persist. It was tough, again, but the way she brought it was in such a way I accepted the tough criticism and I stayed with her for 2 years. I ended up being on the top of my year with my dissertation and we spoke of pursuing a doctorate's degree. My mentor still remains a friend of mine up to this day and she also counsels some of the children in my business. On a social level, I was a chameleon. I could be in a room and you wouldn't even know I was there. Somewhere around the age of 7 or 8, I shifted from a very talkative, enthusiastic girl into a shy girl with no self-esteem. I just shut down. In school, I let it all just happen. I accepted that school was waiting. By November, I had finished all lessons, just secretively turning the pages in my book when I was waiting for everyone else, every single year in elementary school. I didn't have the vocabulary for it, but I felt I was off. I was bullied in elementary school. I didn't have the tools to stand up for myself. It wasn't until my late 20s I learned how to be myself again, whatever that means. I learned how to talk to people, become more relaxed around people. I learned how to small talk, and I've become rather outspoken from a Belgian perspective. We live in a very opinionated world, and I prefer to speak only when I know what I'm talking about. I like heavy discussions with people who have a different opinion, you know, convince me, change my mind. Most people take that very personal. My job has to give meaning to my life. It's idealistic. It took me a long time to discover what I really wanted to do in life. Everything was interesting up to a certain point. I guess I'm a big gifted cliché sometimes. The overexcitability was a great eye-opener for me. I still felt some sense of guilt. You know, why can't you be like everyone else, accepting that this was the way I was built and that that is okay gave me the last push I needed. As hard as life was sometimes, I didn't fit in, I had a low self-esteem, I liked every subject up to a certain point when I gave up. I learned many lessons in life later than everyone else, but I wouldn't change a thing. Every high and low brought me to this point in life. My weaknesses gave me strength later in life. Being the one on the outside of groups made me learn to listen to people and see what is hidden beneath the surface. My interest in every subject that comes by gave me the curiosity in life I want to pass on to the next generations. My lack of persistence turned into the complete opposite. Never tell me I can do something. Frustration is a great source of energy I have come to discover, and there is nothing wrong with being the sensitive one. We cannot all be the loudest in the room.
Absolutely. We all have unique experiences in life, and with each new experience, we have the opportunity to learn more about ourselves and our social and environmental influences, the things and people around us. So each new experience brings the opportunity for growth and development, but only if we choose to, and this is where autonomy and other autonomous forces come to play. As you said so beautifully, Els, frustration is a great source of energy. Dabrowski would agree fully, as supported by his human development theory, the theory of positive disintegration. So if we look further into Dabrowski's work, according to Dabrowski, we have to go through this angst to positively grow and develop. We have to push beyond what is easy, and that's actually where weaknesses can develop into strengths, as you also beautifully described. I love how you stated that you wouldn't change a thing. What a powerful reflection and a great source of acceptance of the self. Your deep dive sessions certainly support this endeavor. I hope all who are able will participate in these deep dive sessions. For those who are unable to participate in your sessions, what might be one or two things that parents, teachers, or school administrators might try in the more traditional school environments to better support the more typical learning needs of highly, profoundly gifted students?
Supporting the learning needs is more than providing extra content. Something that happens still too often is that people expect that these children can do it all on their own because they are so smart. The disappointment is big when it turns out that they can't. The pace is very slow, they skip a lot of questions, they don't know what to do, and they are too afraid to ask, or they ask questions all the time. These children also need growing opportunities, but you cannot grow on your own. Learning is a social event. You need someone on your side to support you in this. If you never learn how to persist, how to solve a question where you actually have to think about, where you have to look in your book to find the method of solving the question, then you are lost when differentiation or acceleration means drop them a level higher and that's it. They need, especially in the beginning when you shift gears, a lot of assistance in the how-to of learning. The executive functions are often underdeveloped, and there is also the asynchronous development. They can be very good at intuitively learning another language, but that does not mean they are equally good at math or biology. It does not mean they are equally good at grasping the rules of a language. It is easy to just look at the cognitive skills and decide we can shift gears here, but acceleration is a lot more than that, and learning is a social event. As I said, they are not equally good at everything. When you accelerate, the class expectations differ too. More dependent work, different levels of text that are discussed, more planning skills, more difficult exercises in gym, and teachers also expect you to have more life experience. Learning about astronomy at age 4 is a totally different thing than learning astronomy at age 15. Learning is not always about looking forward, but also about looking back from time to time. These things are often overlooked or underestimated when it comes to the impact on a child when it accelerates. Do you want your 9-year-old to join these 15-year-old teenagers to the cinema? What movie will they choose? How will they get there? When should my 9-year-old come home? This is also part of the acceleration. You cannot lock them up in a separate room and just do the school material and come home. One size does not fit all, and choosing differentiation or acceleration is a matter of one case at a time. There is no easy go-to solution when it comes to these children, as they all develop in such different ways. They all have such different life experiences, and they develop in 7 different paces at a time.
Exactly. This is often where we can see a huge difference. The pace of development can be exponential. Sometimes you can literally observe leaps in development where you actually see them intuitively skipping what we might consider to be the typical steps in learning. And we actually see this happen in all areas of development, not just in the traditional academic sense. Emotionally, they can be very attuned to their surroundings. They may not have to ask how you are feeling. They may actually feel what you're feeling. Physically, even at an early age, they may skip crawling or go straight to walking or even running. They are often the one in a room who will stand up for what is right or quietly make amends behind the scene. Socially, they often want to talk about something purposeful or meaningful to them, or just continue contemplating the thoughts in their head. The differences are in the greater than typical sensitivities, intensities, and awarenesses that we are talking about. You can imagine how these overexcitabilities in all forms, how they can propel development. But they are not always obvious, and this is the most crucial point to understanding. Often, these overexcitabilities are expressed internally and need to be supported. We have to integrate the social, emotional, physical, altruistic, and cognitive development into the learning process and the learning environment. One way to do this is through mentorship. Your deep dive sessions are great opportunities. What about your like-minded peer mentorships? Can you tell us more about those?
Quite a percentage of our teenagers are being homeschooled. We provide support that takes into account their overexcitabilities, their asynchronous development, and their need for peers. A lot of our teenagers feel out of touch with their environment and with themselves. That's why we allow some of our teenagers to work as a mentor in our kids' sessions. They help the children with their creative work, they play with them, they talk with them, they guide them alongside the adult mentor. Afterwards, we discuss their experiences during these sessions. They recognize themselves in these toddlers, they think about their old passions, their intensity, their need to learn, the same nuisance with loud sounds, labels in their sweaters, their need for autonomy, their quirky interests, their empathy. Some of these things got lost along the way, and this way they realize that it is all giftedness related. They realize they are more than just an IQ test, more than their latest performance, and they experience firsthand all the things that are related to giftedness. They think about their old self and question how they can find that inner drive again. We discuss this so they realize it is never too late to become what you could have been. On the other hand, the children look up to the teenagers. They can relate, they see themselves in these teenagers, and they can see what they can become later in life. One of our teenagers who did this is now thinking of pursuing a master's degree in psychology so he can work with these gifted children as well. He wants to give them what he needed at that age, but it didn't exist yet back then. It is one of the biggest compliments you can get as a counselor.
What a collaborative and supportive space and an essential opportunity. On behalf of families throughout Flanders and our international audience here, I want to compliment you, Els. You are doing amazing work. But aside from all that you're doing, more importantly, you're allowing. You're creating environments and opportunities where highly profoundly gifted children can recognize themselves, think about their old self, and question how they can find that inner drive again. It's never too late to become. Thank you for sharing and this opportunity to reflect with me. We have come further than we even realize. And that's true for our listeners as well. With gratitude for all and all that we are, thank you for listening. Thank you for joining us. Room with a View is produced by the International Gifted Consortium Education Outreach Initiative for you and by you. Join us on social media, giftedconsortium.org, and connect with me on LinkedIn. Until next time, enjoy the view.